Hey, Guy Watch people, it's Phil Goth here again with the Guy Watch podcast. Before we get started today, I just want to thank you guys for listening and engaging, and wanted to give you a quick reminder to stay connected with us on social media because your support does mean so much. You guys are the only reason that I can continue to do this. Your input and your feedback, I want to use it all just to make the show as good as I possibly can. So with that, just stay connected. But today, I'm so fortunate to bring with you a gentleman named Daniel Cattell, and he has a pretty amazing story. It's not too run-of-the-mill by any means. He's 21 years old, and he's lived a pretty hard life. So I'm going to let him explain it to you, and we're going to get started. Daniel, thanks for opening up your house today and hanging out with me and telling us a little bit about you.
Sure.
Before you get too much into your story, can you kind of tell us where you came from?
Sure. I grew up in CPS. I was born and raised in Texas. Grew up in what you call Child Protective Services. I got taken away from my parents when I was two. Bounced around from different group homes, foster homes, and ended up aging out at 18. But that's kind of where I've come from. Lots of moving around, different families. I grew up in African American households, Mexican households, white households. I grew up in poor neighborhoods, rich neighborhoods. I kind of know how it's like to have, you know, both sides. Age 12 or 13 is when life kind of really got crazy for me, where I ended up experimenting with drugs and just started living like a criminal, really. From an early age, I knew about God, but didn't really have any kind of connection or personal relationship with Him, just kind of knew about Him.
So now, when you're young and you're in the system, right, you're working through protective services, you're living in there, they're moving you from house to house. Mm-hmm. Did you feel like a member of those families?
Like those kinds of things are, foster homes are temporary places. CPS, when they take you away from your family, their intentions are to, you know, I guess rehabilitate. My mom was an alcoholic, and at least that I know of, she was an alcoholic. I don't know if she did drugs or not. I assume she did. She was abusive to me. So I guess they wanted her to take counseling and classes and stuff, and then the idea was to, you know, go back with my mom.
Work you back into the house.
Right, and that never happened. Those foster homes were always temporary, you know. I was a very troublesome kid. Like, I ran away from home when I was probably 5 or 6 years old. I didn't get very far, but...
Those little legs don't take
you. Yeah, I thought going down the street was running away, but... I was in all kinds of trouble at a young age. I remember knowing these people weren't these people that I was living with weren't my mom and dad. And I just grew up feeling really angry, confused at first, but angry, like, you know, like I wasn't good enough. Like, you know, why does I go to school? Every kid has a parent. Why don't I?
Just and feeling different.
Different. I hated my name, my last name. I just hated my name. And, I was always wanted to know about my life, but CPS, they keep like records about your history and stuff like that real private until you turn 18. At 12 years old is when things took a change. I remember my first time I went to juvenile was people going into jails and juvenile, and they, you know, preach about God and stuff. I remember knowing that day when I was in my first time in jail when I was only 12, that life could be different. Right now, my life was crazy, but I knew that it could be different, I guess. But as far as your question as to where I've come from just...
All walks of life.
All walks of life. I've been in the ghetto, grew up in the hood. I grew up with rich... I got adopted by some pretty wealthy people. I mean, my dad, I call him my dad because he's been more of a dad to me than my real dad. His name's Sean. But, you know, just to give you an idea of how they live, live pretty wealthy. He has like a Lexus and a two-story house, and that's not the point. You know, they were really good people, and at 14 years old, they took me in and adopted me.
And really, that was in the peak of you causing trouble.
Right,
but yet they still took the risk and tried to love, right?
Yeah, it's a funny story. I was in a group home because I was a troublemaker. So I was in a group home. That was probably the longest. It was a structure, like a boot camp type of place. Like, okay, you messed up so many times in these places that we're going to put you here, and you're stuck there. Like, barbed wire fences, you look around, and you're like, oh, you know, I know I messed up. I was there for 2 years. It was real structured. I liked it because you got up, you know what you're having for breakfast. You have your, it was just like a boot camp.
Everything had a schedule.
So I grew up like that. That had a major shape, like a major, it really shaped my life as I am today, because it made, like, at that age, it had a lot of structure, like, was the structure I needed in my life at that time. Well, I still didn't have any family, and I still had no visitors, and nobody came and visited me or called me or none of that. It was just me, that life, and that was it. I knew that something had to change because I'm only 13 years old and I don't have a family event. I mean, you can't stay there forever, you know? Well, I get this, I had a therapist that I saw once a week to talk me through, you know, everything. And I was seeing her for 2 years. And I remember one day she said that I was getting adopted and there were some people that were going to adopt me. And my first reaction to that was, someone's going to adopt me. Like, I had to let that sink in. Like, who would adopt me, you know? Well, they came and saw me, and it was my mom's actually, her name is Laura, and my dad's name is Sean. They came and visited me. They were really nice people and had real core values and were Christian. And I remember that we went out to eat and had lunch, and I knew that afterwards they said that they knew when they saw me that I was their son, like I was meant to be their son, and like they wanted, it was a for sure thing, they wanted to adopt me. Adoption processes take about 6 months, so once you realize that, okay, we want to get adopted, then you go to the court and file for that, it takes 6 months. Well, it only took 4 months for me because they were so sure that they wanted me as a son that they just kept, you know, hounding the courts, and the courts finally said, all right, well, we'll get them adopted.
They just pushed it through.
Yeah,
quick.
Pushed it through.
So now, these people have only met you once?
I visited them one time. They came and visited me, took me out to lunch, and that's it, one time. And then that week, they came to pick me up from the group home. That same week, I packed my stuff, and I was going in to move in with them. It was just like foster families, they take you from one home, and then you move to another home. It was no different. I was in a group home for 2 years, and the next thing I knew, my life changed like that, and I was moving into a two-story house with a wealthy family who loved me and wanted me to be their son. It was like a classic story of
like rags grace, to riches,
yeah. Rags to riches, a grace. It was a grace story is what it was, because I didn't deserve any of that. But, and of course, I completely trashed that because I just wasn't used to it, and I didn't think I deserved love. I remember they did their best. They wanted me to go to school, wanted me to get my GED, or wanted me to get my high school diploma. They wanted good things for me. Just because of the life that I lived before, I wasn't used to it. I took it wrong, and things didn't work out like they should have been, and I ended up going back into CPS, went back into a group home. I was a little older, so I was 15 or 16, and then ended up going to another lockdown facility, which didn't do me any good. It made me worse. But long story short, from that point in my life was from age 15 to, I want to say 18, was very dark for me, because I ended up being homeless by choice, because I had a perfectly good family that wanted to help me, wanted to, you know, guide me through life. But I, by that point, it was a little too late. You know, I had already was into meth and heroin, that nobody wants, you know, a thief around their family or somebody who is looking to get money for their next, you know, next high. So to me, in my opinion, at that point, I thought it was too late. Like, I lost my family because they don't want nothing to do with me. And it didn't occur to me that I could start changing my life and mending those relationships like I'm doing now. I now talk to my mom and dad, and they know I'm doing good, you know, That relationship has been repaired, and it's taken a while to do that, and it's taken a lot of hard work to do that.
That's awesome, though. I mean, that I think that there comes a... There's nothing harder in somebody's life than admitting fault sometimes, mm-hmm. right? And, I mean, from what I heard you say is these people came and wanted to do good for me, but I just couldn't accept it at the time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think that anybody who's been in those dark places, you know, it's funny because, you know, I've made a lot of mistakes, right? And mm-hmm. and I think criminal behavior is kind of like alcoholism. You know, like when you meet a guy who's an alcoholic, he says, well, you know, I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink in 15 years. Well, a criminal is kind of the same sometimes. Like, I'm a criminal, even though I haven't committed a crime in 15 years. Mm-hmm. You know, because, I mean, that's always something that's there.
And anybody could be a criminal just like anybody could be an alcoholic.
Yeah.
But some are more prone to it. My whole family is... Now that I'm old enough that I can contact my real family, I've learned a lot about them. And to be honest, if I hadn't gone through what I did, gone through CPS, I might have turned out a very different individual. My whole family runs, they're all alcoholics. My oldest brother is in prison for 10 years for aggravated robbery. There's only one person in my family who's done well with his life. He's still an alcoholic, but that doesn't make you a bad person necessarily. He went into the Army. He's an Army Ranger. I'm the youngest of my family. I'm the baby of the family.
Are they all in Texas?
Yeah, they're all kind of scattered. I actually just maybe a few weeks ago learned who my dad was. So that's kind of crazy. You know, I'm being this old and never knowing who my dad was. My mom never talked about my dad. I knew his name and I knew how old he was by my case file that I read when I turned 18. But never knew what he looked like, never, you know, met him in person, still never met him in person. But I now know what he looks like, I know where he lives, and I talk to all my sisters, all my brothers. It's just nice, but I know that how they live, I know that I would have turned out differently had I grown up like that. It was clearly God's purpose and plan for me to grow up the way I did. Even though it was crazy, it was necessary. I mean, I can't say for sure if I'd be the same person if I had grown up with my mom.
You know, my family isn't criminals or drug addicts or alcoholics, but I look at the area that I grew up in. I didn't grow up in the Des Moines area. I grew up in Iowa, but in a town on a river that's a little poorer, you know, and I go back to my neighborhood that I grew up in every once in a while and still see family. And occasionally I'll run into somebody that, you know, I was in school with or something like that. And I see these people in the lives that they live, and the, you know, not that everybody in that town doesn't do well, but the group of people that I was with really have not done much with their lives. And, you know, a lot of them are in jail. And I think that even with a family that could have tried to set me straight, I think that I would have fallen into my peer group and been part of that, and where would my life be? I'm fortunate that my mother took me away from there and moved me, because, yeah, it's kind of like you said, I don't know where I'd be or what I would be doing, but I would almost guarantee I wouldn't be doing as well as I do now, emotionally, physically, everything, you know? So I can relate a little on a different side, so.
Yeah, I like I said, because of how I grew up and how I lived, Consequently, I went to prison at 18.
Now, how old a guy are you now?
I'm 20.
You're 20?
Yeah, I'm still young. But my life experiences make me feel like I'm older. Like, I'm a lot more mature than my girlfriend's husband, ex-husband.
Yeah, your girlfriend's husband, that might be a different story.
He's 35, you know? And, you know, I try to be civil, but, you know, I can only be as civil as he is. But that being said, I'm still young, and I don't claim to know it all, and I still have a lot to learn. And right now, I can only do the best with what I have. I've bounced around from job to job until I finally settled in and I'm comfortable with what I'm doing. I don't have any trades or anything to fall back on, which is what I need. I still need to get a GED, but right now I'm comfortable with where I'm at in life, and I know that no matter what I do, wherever I'm at, that God's got me. And I know that for a fact, because like I said, when we were talking about those dark times, not everything has been peachy and rosy the whole way. I've messed up. I mean, even while I was here, my girlfriend that I live with, she took me in when I had nothing. I was homeless and didn't have anything, and she took me in, knowing that. And now when I have it, when I comes to the point in my life when I have it all, like, that's something I'm going to remember. Like, she had my back when I had nothing, you know.
Well, there's not a lot of people like
not
that
a lot of people. Yeah. No. Most people want you to be all fixed up and have everything together before they get with you. Well, she was the opposite. I'd never met a woman like that, that she didn't care that I didn't have a job or that I didn't have everything together. She helped me put myself together, helped me get right with God. And that's where we are, you know. And it was kind of, you know, a little hard at first, but it's about choices. I choose every morning to get up at 4:30 in the morning to go to work. That's a choice, because you could wake up and be like, I don't freaking want to go to work.
That's a choice that, you know, I don't make.
Yeah, this, I mean, it's a choice to do that. I choose to come home every day and do my responsibilities. And being 20 years old, I'm not used to having responsibilities. I mean, before, my responsibilities were pretty much none, if any. Well, now that's different. I now have 3 kids, and I have to, I'm a role model now. Like, everything I do now, I have to be careful with what I do. I don't smoke or drink anymore, and I don't do the things that I used to, because, like I said, I'm a role model now. And once I realize that, it's not just about me anymore. It's bigger than that.
I think that a lot of people don't realize that when they're far beyond your walk in life. You know what I mean? I see a lot of parents and people out there that kids look up to you, kids see what you do.
They really do.
And it's up to us to be that example. And even, not even kids, I mean, when you look around in the community or in churches or in, you know, whatever you're doing, there's always somebody looking at what you're doing. And if you're doing something that is responsible, if you're doing something that is positive and good, mm-hmm. or on the flip side, if you're doing something bad, people notice that, and people take that at face value a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but you attract those people. If you do what's good and what's right and what's holy, you attract, you know, holy people who do what's right. If you do the opposite, you attract those kinds of people. Just like that verse in the Bible where it says, good company corrupts good habits. The people you hang out with is who you are most like. Kind of like there's a saying that says, if you show me a man's friends, I can show you his character. That's very true, because the friends that I used to have were, like we were talking about, gangbangers, drug addicts, and people of that walk of life. So if I showed you that group of friends, that would tell you a lot about my character. Not to say that I judge any of those people, because I don't. All those people, I love everybody. I'm not like against anybody or anything like that. I've come from all walks of life, so I can relate to almost anybody. I guess what I'm trying to say is,
there's love for everybody.
There is. And
I mean, people who make the bad decisions are one good decision away from the next step and being productive. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all about choices, and like I've made bad choices. Everybody's made bad choices, but it's not too far, and you're not too far, you know, to come back from that. I guess I'm living testimony of that. I mean, I never thought I'd be able to be honest, I never thought I'd be able to stop doing meth, because that was the most hardest decision that I had. I had to make the decision to stop using meth, not just for myself, but for people that I love. Like, meth is an addicting drug that destroys lives. And if anybody else has done meth or has tried meth or knows people who use meth, they know that to be true. It destroys families, it destroys trust, it destroys your life, your work, everything. It will take everything from you. When I decided that I needed to stop, I didn't have any counseling, any help, anybody to tell me how or to talk to when I needed to. I ended up just stopping cold turkey for about a month and a half before I relapsed again, which was months ago. But this was when I was still with my girlfriend, and she knew that I had a meth addiction, and she still wanted to help me get through that. And she even offered to try to get me to counseling and to, I think it was Teen Challenge or one of those programs that kind of help you get your life together and be sober. I refused all of that.
Why did you refuse it?
Well, because like I said, I grew up in places like that. Okay. Teen Challenge, Gary Job Corps, places like that that have structure.
And you just don't want that institutionalized.
I know that I'm very institutionalized, and that's something that I have to break because I've been in prison and jail and county and all those places and group homes, I've become institutionalized, which is why it took a long time to get that criminal mentality out of my head, because to me, I had no home, I had no family. Jail was kind of my home. It got to the point where in my life where I was like, wow, like, why do I keep coming to jail? Like, you come to jail once and you're like, man, this sucks, I want to get out. And you keep coming back to jail, and then finally you realize it's because you're comfortable here. You've been here so many times, you know the routine, you're accepted here. It becomes a home, and that's sad. Once I got out of prison, I've only been to prison once, and once I got out, I made a solemn oath where I was like, I don't care what happens, I'm not coming back to this place.
So you went to prison at 18?
At 18, and I served an 8-month sentence, which was long enough, you know?
And so I know, I'm sure we have numerous listeners from that have maybe been to jail, mm-hmm. or even maybe a county facility. How does that differ from prison? Like, what is prison?
Jail and prison are similar in ways. Prison is much worse. It differs by, in prison, gangs run the prison. In county, you obviously have more control. The officers and your jail guards, they have control of that facility. In prison, the officers don't have any control over that. It's all run by gangs. Everything is run by gangs. So when you just get sentenced and you're going to prison, it's especially if you've never been to prison before, you're going and people automatically it's really racist, actually. Prisons are racist, at least the prisons that I've been to and that I know of, because if you're a white person, you have to join a white gang. Sometimes you have to. If it depends on the small. If you go to a small prison like I did, I went to a private prison, and I knew I had somebody that I'm not going to call him a friend, but I hung out with him a lot. We played chess. You know, one of our routines was playing chess and working out together. And he was my age. He was 19 or 20, skinny white kid. Just a kid, really. I mean, we're both kids going to prison. I guess he was getting recruited into, I want to say, if it was either Aryan Brotherhood or there was a white gang called the Woods, which is like, there's a bunch of gangs in prison. But they wanted him in his gang, or in their gang, and I guess he refused that because his sentence was so short that he didn't want to, you know, deal with any of that. Joining gangs in prison can also make your sentence longer too, because of the trouble you can get into. So he flat out refused and said, no, you know, I'm going home in X amount of time, and he would rather just mind his own business and stay under the radar. Well, they didn't take too kindly to that. So how it works in prison is that they'll go and speak to the, you know, black gangs or the Mexican gangs and tell them to rough him up and basically make him scared enough to go run to that protection.
Them. Yeah,
because that's really all it is. Gangs, to me, in my opinion, it's cowardice. I mean, just the things that I've seen some really messed up things. I've had a lot of messed up things happen to me. I've been jumped in prison by gangs.
Well, because, so now you're Hispanic, mm-hmm. right? So now, if you're a friend who's white that you play chess with, mm-hmm. can you guys associate?
That's the thing. You can, if they're not gang affiliated, you can. If they are gang affiliated, you just hang out with just whites. Like if when I first went in, I had the choice if I wanted to join a Mexican gang. I clearly didn't want to do that. So I ended up, my time was real easy. I stayed to myself, read books, and stayed in the library, went to school, and I had a job in prison and just stayed under the radar. Well, I had other Mexican people that I hung out with who weren't in gangs, just like me, just doing their time and trying to go home and not come back to that place. You can associate with them. You can associate with anybody, really, but you're not supposed to. That's what I mean. It's real segregated, real racist. And if it's prison is all about rules. Like, they have rules you have to follow. If you don't, there's consequences. I remember my first time I got jumped to, like, I mean, anybody would be scared in that situation because it's like, man, you know what's about to happen. You step into a room, they want to talk to you, and you go in there, and then all of a sudden, they all come, like, they're standing around you. You know something's about to happen. They're surrounding you, and then they're telling you what you did, like, why you're going to get beat up. And that moment, you can do either two things. You can fold up and let them stomp you and beat you up, or you can fight, really. I mean, there's not much you can do against
an 18-year-old kid.
Yeah,
and five or six grown men. Grown men who work out and, you know, live that lifestyle.
So it depends. If they can, in prison, in that kind of life, they will jump you. Grown men will jump you, but half the time, depending on the severity of why. Okay, like if you disrespect a gang member or what, it's childish, really. But if you disrespect a gang member, chances are you'll get jumped. If you steal from a gang member or it just depends. Whatever you do, if they think that it's messed up, you're either going to get jumped or they'll have somebody your age that's in the gang to fight you one-on-one, which I've been in so many of those that I ended up going to solid. I spent 4 months not like all at the same time, but a total of 4 months in solitary confinement.
Out of my eight-month sentence
because I was getting into fights. But the first time that I ever got into a fight, I did fight back. And the reason is because when I was in county jail, I've never been a fighter. I've always tried to talk things out and to be peaceful and to be at peace with everybody. But prison is different. You can't be a Christian in prison. You can be a Christian anywhere, but what I mean is it's hard. It's very difficult to be a Christian in prison because it's viewed as weakness. And I remember when I read my Bible and I went to chapel services in prison, but just living in that environment was so difficult. It's kind of hard not to, you know, get involved in that kind of, you know, you get wrapped up into it. It becomes...
So at the time, though, what was your faith like then?
My faith was real. I didn't really have much faith in God. My faith in God was I questioned God a lot, and I demanded things from God. When I prayed to God, I would pray for something specifically, and if God didn't deliver on what I had prayed for, I would just assume I would be like, okay, well, you're not real, or you must not care, or you must not be real. And I think that it got to a point where God wanted to show me that he was real. He wanted to show me that he loved me, that there was some prayers that were answered to show me that that God was in control and that there was a God. One of those was I ended up getting out of prison earlier than I was supposed to. And it was God. I mean, all the way. And that's just one example. So many examples that I prayed to God about something. And I said, even if you don't answer this prayer, that I will still, you know, you're still God, you know, you're still in control. And that's when my faith started to build, where God would answer more and more prayers because my faith was, I was demonstrating more faith. The more faith I had in God, the more he would answer my prayers. And it hasn't always been like that. And I'm not claiming to have the best faith in God, but now, instead of worrying about things that I can't control, there's a lot of things that I can't control. I only focus on the things that I can control, and I just do my best, and I let God do everything else.
Yeah, I think that that's a good way to do it, you know?
He's God. I mean, the thing about it is that I live in Dexter, and this is a small town, and there's some railroad tracks down there. And I think that worship and having that connection with God on a daily basis is important because I can't do the things that I'm required to do on a daily basis without God. I will fall and I will fail every time. I tried to do it without God. It doesn't work. So every now and then I go out to my, you know, quiet spot by the railroad tracks and I'll just put my earbuds in and I'll listen to my worship music and just praise God, and I'll worship Him in spirit and from the heart, and pray, and anything that's on my mind on that at that moment, I will pray about it. Changes that I've seen in my life, I mean, just how far I've come. I mean, I used to be a cutter. I struggled with depression, and I used to burn myself with cigarettes and cut my arms, and that's a testimony. I don't do that anymore, but I still have the marks to prove, where I've come from.
And with that, the scars, we all have scars. Some mm-hmm. of them we can see, some of them we can't, but mm-hmm. I mean, I think everybody's...
The scars we can't see are the ones that I deal with daily, that my girlfriend will tell you that hasn't always been easy to overcome. Anxiety, depression, stuff from my past that, we all have regrets and we feel guilty about things. Those are the things that we have to let go. The things that you can't change are the things that you regret. Like, man, I regret having done what I did 5 years ago. You can't change that. I can't go back in time and undo that mistake that has, because I'm a felon, it's been hard to get most jobs that I wanted because they were good paying jobs. I could sit here and cry about it all day, but in reality, that's not going to change anything,
Yeah.
I have to go out there and search for jobs. It's funny because I got in a point in my life, actually pretty recently, where I was job searching. Couldn't find any jobs. Like, I was out there job searching, driving to Stewart, Des Moines, Earlham, all these places looking for jobs, and I couldn't find one. Got to the point where I was just ready to give up. Like, might as well go back to criminal activity because it makes more money than I can. From my experience, I made more money living like a criminal than I do living honestly. But nobody wants to live like a criminal. That's not a fulfilling life. The fulfilling life you get is when you get your first paycheck from your first job that's your money. Like, you worked hard for it. Now, we have problems with thieves that are in the area that come around and try to break into our stuff or the neighbor's stuff. And most people will get mad, like, oh man, if I see that thief, I'm gonna do this to him. Me, my approach is, I used to be that thief. I used to go in to break into people's garages and do this and do that. If I ever caught the thief breaking into my stuff, my approach would be different because clearly he needs something. I don't know what he needs, but food or whatever, I would be mad if he's breaking into my stuff, but just having nobody, at least that I know of, can relate to that. And I'm not trying to condone people stealing stuff, but because he's no different than anybody else. He's a human being just like everybody else. He's choosing to steal, but why is he choosing to steal? It's hard to be Christian in a lot of stuff that happens in my life because my natural reaction is to be angry about a lot of things. Whenever I pray and I take the time to listen, because you can pray to God about things, but if you get up and move about your life, you're not gonna feel anything. You have to actually sit down and listen, which is why when I go out to my when I go out to the train tracks and I listen, I hear God speaking to me, it's not a voice from heaven or thunder or none of that. It's God speaking to my heart. I remember coming back from the train tracks one day after worship, after spilling my heart out to God, where I felt at peace. I was walking back and I saw my house from a distance. And I thought, man, I have a home. Like, this feels really good. Like, not many people have a home. Some people are homeless. Some people don't have a home. I'm blessed right now. And I remember just feeling blessed. Well, then I heard a voice. I don't know if it was me or something tugging at my heart. I think it was God talking to me, and he said, everybody's homeless spiritually. If we're Christians, we're all spiritually homeless until we get to heaven in an earthly sense. It wasn't what I was looking for. It's funny, because I'm a man and I'm flesh, I think of things like tangible things I can see, that I can touch, I can feel. God doesn't work like that. He works in the spiritual sense, and although that might not be what I'm looking for, what I want at the time, it's what I need. The more I fill myself with spiritual stuff and less physical stuff, I die in my flesh and I become more spiritual. And that's why I'm very spiritual. I consider myself very spiritual. Having a relationship with Jesus Christ is just the only important, it's just the most important thing that anybody could have. I can't stress that anymore, you know?
It's interesting for me because I just feel like in sitting here with you, you know, we've met once before, you know, and just in passing, but I don't have a whole lot that I can say that heightens what you're already saying. I mean, you relay this message in a better way than I think that I could. And that's why I think it's so awesome to hear you share these things.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're in a small town. Like, I pulled into town and there was a sign that said like 419. Is mm-hmm. that the population of this
yes.
town? Okay, so
small.
You live in a town with 400 people.
Mm-hmm.
How, I mean, big cities in Texas, lived in the capital
That's
of Iowa.
That's an adjustment.
How is this different? I mean, what is it better? Is it worse? Is there trouble? Is it hard to get connected spiritually? Like, what's your dynamic here?
So, obviously, the reason why I came from Texas was I was fleeing that lifestyle and I wanted change. So Texas is a dead state to me. That's where I was born and raised. All the negativity of my life is there. When I had the chance to come up to Des Moines, Iowa, I jumped on it because it was something new, a new city, brand new, fresh start, clean slate. And I'm a grown adult now that I can choose, I can build my own life. So I jumped on it and I came to Des Moines, Iowa. And a lot has happened since then, and I've ended up coming to a small town that's just west of Des Moines, and it's called Dexter. It's about 30 minutes away. It's, like you said, it's very small. And I've come from big cities. I lived in the fourth largest city in America, Houston, Texas. And it's been an adjustment because I don't have any friends down here. Just what you see, my family, and that's it. And coworkers, that's all I have. So it can get pretty lonely sometimes, but there's plenty of stuff to do to keep your mind occupied. I mean, I play guitar. I'm very musical. I play different instruments. I can't really say that I'm bored, but being out in the open and small places and around nature has really helped my relationship with God, because you're not around the noises and the, you know, like big cities are noisy. They have people and, you know, different, more things to keep your mind distracted. Here it's a lot more simple, where you have things you can do if you get bored. But sometimes when you don't have anything to do and you're not distracted, it's the perfect time to pick up your Bible or to play some songs or to worship God or to go for a walk or go to the park. There's only one park and there's only one convenience store here. There's no restaurants here. So you would have to drive 10 minutes to Stewart to go eat or whatever, you know, if you wanted to. I really like it. I was raised in the cities, and I can't say that I miss it too much. I really like living out here.
I mean, from the sound of it, it's helping you connect in your faith too.
Yeah, it is, and I don't really need a lot of social interaction because I consider myself an introvert. I'm a pretty introverted person, so I like being around people. I love socializing. I get really nervous sometimes, and that's just, you know, because I'm an introvert. I enjoy my alone time, and then I enjoy having family that I can take care of and that is there for me. And I really like this town, and it's a really nice town.
You know, I think that, you know, I know you're talking about jobs and stuff. It probably limits your...
It does, yeah.
Work abilities a little bit.
You have to travel to, I mean, the, like I said, I was searching for jobs everywhere and I couldn't find one. But the crazy thing about that is God actually dropped a job on my lap one morning, literally on my morning before I got out of bed, because the day before, after I decided in my mind where it's like, okay, I give up, I can't find a job, I'm not going out anymore. And my girlfriend was like, you don't have to go out no more. Clearly you can't find, you've put in applications after application after application, and none of them will hire you. No one will call back, or they do call back and say they don't need anybody. I got stuff in the mail saying, thank you for putting your application in, but we don't need you for this reason. Well, one morning I'm laying in bed, and on Facebook, somebody posts he owned a construction company. It's a plastering company. Well, they're friends with my girlfriend's sister, and she shared a post that he needed workers. So once, and he was offering, I think it was like $15 an hour for a laborer and $20, or $15 an hour for like a painter and $20 an hour for a laborer. So he really needed help. Well, I hadn't even gotten out of bed the day before I was done. I had gave up looking for jobs. And that morning it was like, God basically was telling me, why are you going out there leaning on your own understanding to do it on your own, to search for a job? Why? It wasn't until I decided that I give up, I'm going to sit here and just, I didn't actually fully say in my heart that I would trust God to deliver and give me a job, but I was exhausted. I was like, I can't find a job. You know, I feel really worthless as a man. My girlfriend has this job and she's bringing in all the income and I have nothing. Like, what kind of man am I? Well, that morning it was like plopped right on my lap. I sent him a Facebook request and called him and was like, if I'd be willing to, to help you and I'm willing to work. And he gave me a shot, ended up having to drive to Altoona or Ankeny or one of the two, but it was a construction job.
45 minutes to an hour away.
It was a construction job, so there was a lot of driving involved in it. I ended up working different jobs in Urbandale, Des Moines, Ankeny, Altoona.
All the suburbs of Des Moines.
We did plastering and drywall and stuff like that. It was really nice, but that didn't work out too long because the gas, and it was that car out front of my car, the red one. It's a gas guzzler.
Big Cadillac looking thing, right?
Yeah, it's a 1985 Grand Marquis.
Okay.
And it's only got 9,000 miles on it.
Every vehicle I have, I just pulled up in my work, I got my work van out there, mm-hmm. and that's got 270,000 miles on it, and so.
It's a 1985 though.
Yeah, that's what I mean, that's.
32-year-old car, and it's only got 9,000 miles on it. It needed a tune-up really bad when I got it, but the point being, it wasn't going to get me to work.
Well, and it gets horrible mileage. It's a big old beast of a car.
Yeah. So, the amount of money that I was spending on gas, I got paid every week. It was a good-paying job, and if to this day, if I could, I would have kept that job. I've never had a good-paying job like that, and I loved my job. I loved plastering and doing that kind of work. I had to set aside like almost $100. Paycheck just for gas alone, and even that wasn't doing it. Now I work at Burger King, but it's a job.
I used to do all the facilities works for McDonald's, mm-hmm. and in talking with people who were workers, McDonald's employees, register people back on the line making the food, some of them would demean their job, mm-hmm. right? But they worked really hard at their job, and some of them were fantastic at their job. And everybody that I knew in management worked their way up from nothing to even the people who overseen groups of stores. Mm-hmm. They worked their way up from being the person that ran the register and made the fries to being the boss. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it takes all kinds of people.
Dedication
and motivation. Mm-hmm. And I don't cut yourself short by saying, I only work at Burger King.
No, I don't. Because
it's a blessing that you can do that.
It's a blessing to have a job because I could be without a job. That's how I look at it. And everything that I do, and it's taken me a while to come to this, but I do everything as if I'm doing it for the Lord, because if I didn't, I'd just be a slacker, I would just be a slacker. That's just the truth, because I work hard and I do everything as if I'm doing it for God, because I make the best Burger King sandwich there, because that's just how it has to be the best. And I do my best. It might not be the best, but I do my best. And my first day on the job, they actually complimented me and they said, you're doing a good job. They were like, did you work at a Burger King before? Because I pick things up really fast. I'm a fast learner, and I watch and then I do it and then I pick it up really fast. So they thought that I worked at Burger King before, because they were like, you seem like you know what you're doing. And I was like, nope, I watched you how you did it, and I did it, and I pick up fast, and I'm a hard worker.
We're not building rocket ships.
Yeah, we're not building rocket ships, So I got, and then I actually got a, I didn't get a promotion, but I got the possibility of a promotion, and they gave me more hours, and they said that So the supervisor of the night of the morning shift walked out the day before that I got the job, which has to not be a coincidence. That had to be God, because I was complaining about when I got home. I was like, "Yeah, I'm excited about having the job, but I don't really want to work for $8.25 an hour. But I will because I have to, and I'll have a choice." Well, it was almost as if God was like, "Just calm down. Like, I got this. Like, do you not trust me?" And then when I go to work, the manager pulls me aside out back, and he was like, "You seem like you have potential to be a supervisor, and you look really young." And I told him I was 20, but I told him that I'm a hard worker, and I'll never be late, and I'll always show up on time. And he was like, "Well, our supervisor walked out the morning before, and we need somebody to fill in that. So I wake up at 4:30 in the morning to go to work, and we don't have a supervisor. And the only people that work in the mornings through lunchtime is three people, me and two others. So if there's a possibility for me to prove myself that I'm capable of being a leader, I can have a supervisor position in that job and get paid a little more, which would just be awesome. But I think that God has a plan, and I'm in that plan, and I don't know how it's all going to work out, but
at least you have the faith that
it will. Yeah, I do. And that's just it. Nobody on this earth is here by accident. That's why this is off topic, but I'm totally against abortions and stuff like that, because we are all here by design, because God has this perfect plan. And he has a plan for my life, just like he has a plan for your life, just like he has a plan for everybody who's listening. He has a plan. He's God. We just have to trust that plan, and that's just what it comes down to.
Yeah, you know, I went and spoke with a group of college students this last week, and that's one of the things that I talked to them a lot about. And, you know, sharing some of my past stories, things that I'm not proud of, different things like that. And talking with them about how those are the things that God had put me in so that I can better serve his church down the road. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I didn't understand them. I didn't enjoy them. They were hard. It was difficult. Some of them were bad decisions. But now I look at them and I see how they have shaped me, how they have motivated me to do different things. And I can't take that away because that's who I am. And so somebody who looks at me and thinks differently or
judges
me, mm-hmm, because of the past life experience I've had, that is a horribly arrogant attitude, because those are things that God had gifted me. Even it's not a Christmas gift. It's not something that's joyous.
It shaped you.
But it shaped me. Mm-hmm. And those are things that God has allotted me. Mm-hmm. And don't tell me that I'm any less than you, because these things have made me strong. These things have cultivated me into a Christian who can do more because of the experiences that I've had.
I agree. Amen.
You know, and sometimes I think that, especially that age, like I like working with high school, and I like working with college, because they are in really transition times in their lives, you know, and to get, you know, they're different animal. And it's funny because there's only a few years difference in them, but I see the high school kids a lot of times, they're just looking for something. And a lot of times they're lonely. They think that, you know, that they are lost. Mm-hmm. And the college kids, I find a lot of times they push back and think that either they're too far gone or they're alone in their life decisions and these things. And to have somebody come up there and to be honest with them, I don't approach them like they're kids. I approach them nearly the same as I would an adult. You know, I mean, sometimes I have to alter, you know, or hold back something from a story that's inappropriate for especially a high school kid. But I'm not going to talk to you like you're a child. And I think that helps with their forward momentum. And
it helps for trust too. They can look up, you know, they can look up to you especially if you're trying to be a role model or whatever it is, because if they see you're more open, they're more likely to trust and to, you know, come to you with more of their problems or whatever.
And, you know, and that's something I always laughed about was I had a lot of really good conversations with especially high school kids, because I worked with them for so long. And so I would know all about the family, mom's problems, dad's problems, why the kids fight, why the parents fight. And then I would meet the parents. And, you know, and it's not my position to violate the trust of that kid by saying, I know what happens. You know, I just love on them. Hey, they're doing their best. And I think probably something you're finding out now that I found out when I had kids was there's no book. Just do the best that we can.
Yeah.
And
I just got thrown into the pretty much the deep end.
Yeah.
Because I'm only 20 and I'm having to be a parent. And it's like, they're not my, like I said, they're not my kids, but I love them like they're my own. So where does the line come? Where does the discipline come in? Because is it my place to discipline her kids when they get out of line, or is it just my duty to support her? You know, that's just, you know, like you said, there's no book for it. So it's just do my best. Like, I treat them as they're my own kids, so I do discipline them.
Yeah.
I don't spank them or anything, but my youngest son is Logan. He's 6, and he sometimes is just disrespectful to his mom. Although he's not my kid, I can say, hey, Logan, don't talk to your mom like that. Or don't hit your mom like that. She loves you. I can say stuff like that, you know, and hopefully get, and especially, you know, the oldest, he's 6 years younger than me. He's 14. When he does stuff like that, I can't really, you know, it's not my place to discipline him, you know. I won't do that, you know, because I just, it's not my place to do that.
I think you modeling for him.
Well, also sharing my life story with him helps, because when I was his age, I did the exact same things he did. I'm only 20, I'm only 6 years older, but the things that he's doing, the choices he's making now, are the exact same things I did. Did I call my mom names? I did. Did I argue and fight with my mom? I did, and I regret that now, because like my mom still supports me and still loves me to this day, and I wish I would have treated her better when I was 14 or 15. So sharing that with him, like, hey, you're going to wish you didn't do that to your mom one day. I know that gets so cliche, like, oh, hey, you're going to regret that one day, blah, blah, blah. No, it's true. You know, respect your mom now. Cherish her now, because you know, tomorrow's not promised. Like, you could lose your mom and not have a mom, and then the last thing you said to her was negative. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, you know, coming to him across like that, there's no tension, there's no negativity, there's no fighting, there's no conflict. It's just, it leaves him with the thought, like, okay, maybe I need to check myself. And then off to the side, you know, I'll talk to, you know, my girlfriend and be like, well, maybe you didn't have to come off like that. You know, kids crave for structure. They need structure. I needed structure when I was a kid, and I had none. I had to grow up and figure it out on my own. Well, now we have things in place where we all have chores that we have to do. Not all of them get done. I end up having to do most of their chores sometimes, but I'm okay with that because it's what's required of me. The most important thing that I've learned is love. When I came into this relationship, it was my first relationship that I took seriously. That was a serious relationship. Like, I'm committed to it. I've put a lot of time, effort, and money into this relationship. I poured my heart out into it, and I've learned how to love better, because to me, true love is unconditional, and it's just love.
It's the love that sometimes we see through God and Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. The love that my girlfriend has showed to me was the love that I've been lacking in my life, that I only found in God. She's been in an earthly sense the love that I needed.
Now, I can relate to that a little bit, because that's one of the things that I struggled with in understanding God the Father and His love for us and these things. And sometimes being an angsty kid who maybe was shown love but didn't feel love, you know. And so to rationalize it and wrap my head around what love could actually be, like, I think it's amazing from where you were that you could understand what that love could potentially look like, right? Mm-hmm. Because I struggled with that for a long time, and trying to understand the extent of what God's love could be like.
Yeah, you know, that's coming from a person who has never had a father figure in their life. God, like I said, I've always searched for that on an earthly level. I've searched for that role model. I've searched for that father figure that I've been lacking in my life. But when I couldn't find it, I went to God, and it always leads me back to that scripture where God's a good father. Like, my favorite song that I like to listen to is a Chris Tomlin song, and it's Good Father, and I love that song. And the reason is because when I think about not having a father, I think that I have the best father, and it's God. You know, God's my father. And it always leads me to the scripture where it's, if you ask your father for a fish, is he going to give you a stone? If you ask him for bread, is he going to give you a scorpion? Like, every father wants to give their child the best.
Yeah.
So how much more if you ask God for something? So when I am in need of something, I don't always do this, but when I find myself that when I can, if I'm lacking something and I need something, I humble myself and I get on the ground and I pray and I say, you know, God, you promised to never forsake me. I have no mother, I have no father, and in your word you say that you won't forsake me. And right now, you know my needs. You know the things that I need before they even come out of my mouth. Like, that's how much I am in awe of God. Like, He is the creator of the universe. Like, He made the stars, and He knows each one by name, and just how awesome He is. And once you realize how awesome God is, and just how big God is, like, you can't even wrap your mind around how big God is. Like, why limit? You can't limit God. When I say that God can't do that, because, like, I find myself saying, God can't do that, that's limiting God. He's God. When I realize that God can do anything, it helps me to come to Him in that time of prayer and pray for anything. Even if, no matter how big or how small it is, He's God, He can do it. And He's the ultimate Father. And I ask Him when I have any needs that need to be met, and He always delivers. And sometimes not in the ways that I needed, but not in the ways that I wanted, but it's all the time, it's everything that I needed.
I mean, that even goes back to what we were talking about earlier with the idea of the situations that we sometimes find ourselves in. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe they're not the best situations, but you know what? That's the situation that we needed. Mm-hmm. You know, it might not have been what we wanted.
I think I needed to learn a lot of the life lessons that I needed. I'm not... Not to say that I needed to go to prison, but I probably needed to go to prison, if that makes sense.
No, I get that.
I needed to know that there are consequences for my actions, because I was never spanked as a kid. I didn't have that structure. I never had a father to tell me if I skipped school, like, there was no consequences to that. I did not have that. I needed to go through life making those choices, and obviously, every choice you make has consequences.
Yeah.
You break into a store, you're going to go to jail. I learned that the hard way. You know, I had to go to prison. I had to be homeless. I had to know what it's like to earn, to go to work and to earn your own income to buy the things that you want, not to go out and steal them.
Yeah.
You feel a lot better when you know that you worked for it and it's yours. And there's a sense of pride in that, like, wow, like, you know, you bought that TV, or you paid your bills, and this is yours, you know?
Yeah, and I get that. You know, there's being a blue-collar guy, you know, there's times where I burn through a pair of shoes every 3 or 4 months. Mm-hmm. From working soles off of them.
Me too.
You know, there's days where I can't close my hands. I can't make a fist because I've just been holding things and working with my hands so much, and all of the struggle and pain. But you know what? I can go home and I can hug my kids and I can look at the house that I have and the food that's in my fridge and know that these hands that don't close or these feet that are sore provided this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that's, I don't know that I could ever relay that to somebody who doesn't understand that already, because there's nothing like it. You know, I mean, everybody's built for different things. I couldn't sit in a cubicle and work numbers all day. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not how my mind works. And like you were talking about, where you bring your faith to work. You know, you perform your best because God wants you to perform your best. And sometimes I get in a hurry at work, you know, and I don't always think about it that way. I notice that when I have a really long day, you know, we're doing a bunch of stuff right now and getting ready for some family trips and different things. And so the last 2 weeks have been really rough on me, you know, like I'm working 15-hour days, you know, I mean, just working all night long. And eventually I'll get to the point where I'm just tired. And it's funny because I'll turn on a sermon from somebody or some worship music, and I just stroll through what I'm doing. The time frame doesn't bother me anymore. Nothing else bothers me. All I focus on is doing the task that's in front of me to the best that I can. And when I inject myself with a little bit of the stuff that I'm going to get from a sermon or from worship music, and just that idea of God and what He has allotted me to be able to do, none of that stuff matters anymore. You know what? I'll just keep working until I'm done, you know, and I'll go home. And you know, it goes back to the idea of you got a girlfriend at home that supports you and
mm-hmm. that loves you. You can come home to that love every day.
That you can come home to it every day. And you know what? If you work some overtime and you're doing what you're supposed to do, she's not going to be upset because you came home 15 minutes late because somebody else didn't show up or that. She understands. Mm-hmm. And I think in having friends that I've seen, not all wives or girlfriends understand that. Mm-hmm. You were supposed to be off at 3:00. You came home at 4:00. Where were you for the last hour?
Yeah.
Well, I had to work late. Well, you were supposed to be off at 3:00. You know, and to be able to have somebody who is your partner, your
mm-hmm. partner, you know, in life, yeah.
And you know, I always laugh. You know, we talk about me and my wife. We're a team. You know, I mean, it's a team effort. You know, and we don't succeed singly. You know, sometimes I got to work late, but it's so we can both get to where we need to go. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes she'll have to stay up and do something, or you know, take the kids somewhere and I can't participate. Mm-hmm. We're a team. You know what? We succeeded together, and you know, we're stronger together than you are alone. And
yeah,
I think that I'm super glad that you have that in your life now.
Yeah, like I said, it's taken a lot of hard work and choices after another to lead me to where I'm at now, but I wouldn't be here if I didn't think that God wanted me here. God has a purpose and a plan, and I'm meant to be here at this time right now, and everything happens for His, you know, there's a saying that everything happens for a reason, but it's not necessarily true. It's all things, you know, all things happen for the good of those who love God. You know, He has a purpose for everybody. Yes, everything happens for a reason, but there's a plan in motion. And just got to sit back and just let it unfold, you know.
You know, and I think that something that came from that I was talking about at that college meeting that I had last week, it was the story when Joseph, you know, he was sold into slavery. He became mm-hmm. Potiphar's slave, right? Yep. And Potiphar's wife,
a lot of things
accused
happened.
Him of rape.
Yeah, he and right? Joseph went to prison yeah. because of that, and so many things happened to Joseph. That's funny because yeah. I was going to actually use that story today.
You know, for whatever reason, it's been on, and it's funny that we talk about it because it's been on my mind, and it wasn't even until the day before I met with this group of kids. I didn't even contemplate it. It just all of a sudden came to me, and I was like, that's a great analogy.
Mm-hmm. But God used him to save a nation.
Yeah, and you know what? He did the right thing, right? He made the right decisions.
He could have
made
been
good
bitter.
Choices.
He could have been bitter about that. He yeah. could have decided to get revenge, but in all that, I think he continued to have faith and trust God.
He was convicted of rape on something that he didn't do. Mm. Now, is that God's plan? It's because it's not good. But he got thrown into a prison where he could learn, meet people, and work his way up in the political world to where he, you know, could help run a nation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you look at when, you know, when he interpreted the dreams for the guys that came to prison and said, you're going to be out of here in 3 days, remind people that you know me, you know, remind the king
the
that you know
God,
me.
Yeah.
And he didn't remind him of anything. You know, it's God's way of saying, hey, another 3 years, you're just going to hang out in there. You know, and yet he always maintained so firm. And I would hope that someday I can have faith like that.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
You know, because sometimes I don't always. Sometimes I look at those negative things and I look at these bad situation. I'm not getting thrown in prison, but, you know, something negative happens and I just think, oh, God, what did I do to deserve this? Well, you know what? Maybe this is the plan. You know, and that idea that God's plan is better than ours, and you know, who are we to judge that? Mm-hmm. So
for sure.
But yeah, so I mean, we've been going for a little bit, and I know that, man, we got a whole lot of other stuff that we could talk about.
For sure.
But I'm really glad. I know you got family stuff to do, and we need to get wrapping up shortly. Maybe we could do it again, and we could talk about some more stuff.
Sure.
We'll see what happens. I would love for you to just take a minute, though, and, you know, the thing about throwing a podcast on the internet is you never know who's going to hear you, right? So I would love just some, I mean, you've laid a whole lot of wisdom on us that has been so forthcoming. If somebody is struggling right now, whether it's a kid being disrespectful, somebody who's struggling in and out of jail,
Addiction
especially, man, you know, different things like that. What can you leave them? Like, give me some words of advice just to let them know that they're not alone.
What I would probably say is trusting that God, that everything is going to be, you know, work out. In the end, everything is going to work out for how it's supposed to work out. You might be addicted to drugs now, but it takes your one choice away, one step away from being sober. You can choose to be sober and can start a process of being sober, and then it's day by day, and then before you know it, and you look back and you've been sober for a month, and so on, month by month, and it's a daily choice. You have to choose every day to make the right choice. So if you are struggling with addiction, it's not too late to decide that you want something different. You have to want something different. You need to want to change. Nobody can make that change for you. Nobody can make you change. And you just have to put it in your mind that you want something different for your life. If you are behind bars, or if you've been behind bars, or if you are facing trial, God is your judge. And trusting Him, you know, nobody else is wiser. You know, God knows the outcome. He knows the plan. And the only thing I could leave them with is trust God. Because He's never going to let you down.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic.
Everybody else will let you down, but God won't.
Yeah. Well, we hope that we can surround ourselves with people who won't, but we are all human, prone for error and prone for mistake.
Yeah.
So, all right, man. Well, hey, let's wrap this thing up. We're going to get on the schedule and we're going to do this again, because I want to talk to you about you working with homeless. I want to talk to you about
the guy.
all of your life in between, what's happened. You know, we just scratched the surface, I think. So
yeah, we did.
Let's do it, man.
And sure.
I thank you so much for spending the time with me today, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Sure thing.
Thanks, man.
Yep.
Well, I hope you enjoyed listening to Daniel and his story. There's so much more that we can dive into with him. And so I'm going to schedule to get back with him and record at least one more show. So anybody who has questions for him, anybody who has some comments, please let us know what it is, and we'll make sure that we address those. With that, remember, find us on Facebook, find us on our website. Have a great week and be blessed.